Blog Talk Radio.
This is a dangerous group. The groups that we're.
Ladies and gentlemen!
What's this nonsense?
Good evening, that's right. It is Tuesday, and you know what that means, ladies and gentlemen? It is Keeping It Real with Nikki Outlaw. I thank you each and every day for coming out and supporting us and listening to us tonight. Tonight, my girls are not on, but we have some special guest co-hosts tonight. We have my girl, Keita. Love you for coming in and helping me out tonight. I appreciate it. Sean, DJ Customs, I love you. Thank you also for coming in and helping me out tonight. I appreciate it as well.
No problem.
We have, you know, we're going to talk tonight, you know, as we always do with my co-host as well. And we do have a special guest tonight, Mr. James Bailey. He is director of Missing Voter Project as well as Virginia Cure. And he's going to talk about that later on in the evening regarding restoration of rights for those of our brothers and sisters who are have, for whatever reason, have, you know, become behind bars and now they're out. And Virginia, I found out, is one of those states that doesn't have automatic voter rights back. We actually, they have to petition and go all through. But he's going to talk to us about that a little later and get really in-depth about that. Shout out to our founder and CEO, T.L. Lewis, the chairman in Atlanta. We thank you. We love you for all the support. And you can hear him each and every Wednesday night with The Grind. And I also want to give a shout out to Bucking It Off with Buck on Thursday nights. And if you really want to just have a kick off your Fridays or the weekend, you want to listen to my girl, Miss Passion, for the midday release. So we have some awesome, awesome shows throughout the week, starting on Tuesdays with, of course, myself. So, Keita, you know what? Mm-hmm. Our listeners don't know who you are. I know who you are. Tell them just a snippet of who you are, girl.
Oh, goodness, I am. Well,
promote yourself.
Promote myself, okay. I am the co-host of a Blog Talk radio show as well called Famous Radio. I co-host on Wednesdays, and our show is from 7 to 8:30. I also am a sideline actress and a model and a career woman. I am an all-around, let-me-try-it-out type of woman.
Exactly.
But I love to get involved and be involved with people. So people, they are my heart. So any opportunity I get to work with people and learn about people and their personalities and their lives and their history and what brought them to the point that they are is a deep passion of mine. So, you know, you got to take the good with the bad, I guess, of the infamous baby doll. And to get to know Quita, then you have to know Quita, and you may also get a taste of baby doll. So
that's right. I should have actually said that baby doll because that's how I met you as baby doll. That's right. Then it became Quita. So
Yeah. Definitely.
DJ Customs, because that's how I also met you before I met you as Sean. Tell our listeners and promote yourself.
Okay. That's good. I thought I was just here for the comic relief. I didn't know, you know, that you really wanted to know anything about me. But
oh, come on.
You know, I give you a little bit, you know, not a lot, just a little bit.
Quick taste.
You know, DJ Custom is what everybody calls me. You know, only people that know me for real, you know, get to call me Sean. And, you know, I just say that now so everybody knows that I don't get that opportunity to everybody. But I did radio for a little while out in Virginia. You know, morning show on 103 Jams. I did Hot 91's morning show. I mean, yeah, their morning show and a couple of stations. DJed in the area for years, all the clubs that everybody else has not really had the opportunity to get into, but hear all the stories and legends about. You know, just myself and a chosen few of us out here have done that. So, you know, I got to give some big shout-outs to all of the people that have kept hip-hop and R&B alive and made it what it is today. So that's just me, just a regular old guy who likes to have fun and talk about a lot of things. Right now I'm just doing my side hustle, which is construction, building houses, trying to get people in homes and build equity into your life so you can live and grow and have something to look forward to for you and your family down the road. That's it.
That's all good. Because, see, you know, we got the music going on. And, hey, for like you said, anybody who needs a house built or anything else, you know, he is your man. So hit me up and I'll connect you.
There we go.
You know, and, hey, if you're looking for a model actress, you know, you got both me and Kita, hit us up. We will help you out.
Exactly.
Definitely.
I have to admit, I was kind of sad to see 91 leave the spot, but that's all right.
They're actually back right now. I think they finally got everything together, and they're back.
Yeah,
up
they
and going.
Are.
So
mm-hmm. I heard them a couple of days ago or something. They are back. I don't know when they came back, but they are back on the air. So, you had a nice little hiatus for a while there.
They had a couple of technical difficulties going on. But, you know, big shout-outs going out to Doug, Teddy Bear Perry, the PD over there who got everything back going. So they're about to be up and going real soon.
That's awesome. Okay. Well, that's all right. Well, we can't have you back, but it's a pleasure to meet you.
always. Thank you for having me, and it's nice to meet you through this verbal conversation as well.
Oh, y'all are a trip. You're such a mess. But let's go ahead. We're going to listen to a song before our guest comes on the air. It's a new release, and as most of you know here at Keeping It Real, we support our local come-ups, whether they're a business, artist, model, home builder, musician, whatever it is. And one of our things is getting our artists out there. And this is from B. Taylor, one of his latest Fiesta.
Yo, B. Jay. Quest. Big Tiger Sounds. We about to get it popping out here. Let's show them how we do it. Fiesta.
Fiesta. Havana. Fiesta.
The mangoes and the fresh peaches. Wipe my face and sip my margarita. Turn to my left, saw this hot Latina. Stood up, took my shirt off and showed my chest. The wing she gave me was like, damn, you're the best. Looked again, noticed her body was banging. Booty jumping side to side, I'm swinging and swinging. She nodded like, come on over. I moved in right on over. Came together like two birds in a pond. That different fairies waving a magical wand. Grabbed the lotion and rubbed it on her body. Trying to heat things up before we started the party. She whispered, take it out, poppy. I'm like, I'm here, mommy.
Fiesta. Havana, Fiesta, Caliente, Caliente, Havana, Fiesta, Havana, Havana, Fiesta, Caliente, Caliente, Havana,
More ladies than I'm focusing. There were African, Asian, and Peruvian. Walked up like they owned the world. Carotid around me. We enjoyed your girl. She gave emotion. They began rubbing. Surrounded by hundreds and receiving loving. Try to act bright as he say. Back to my room, baby, can't wait. Wanna grab you and heat your insides up. Gotta be the good till the sun comes up. The chick gon' have your ass ripped up. Your girl's gon' be like she's up. I came to get your butt in gear. Nelly said it's up, it's hot in here. Take it all off, shoot, I don't mind. The flashy life is party time.
Yes, sir. Oh, 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 hot mama. Yes, sir. Caliente, caliente, hot mama. Yes, sir.
Welcome back, and yes, that was, like I said, Fiesta by B. Taylor, right, a new release from him, and I love our up-and-coming artists because, you know, they're grinding and working hard, trying to make it out here, and, you know, I give them kudos because, you know, one day when I play a song, I can go when they're on the Grammys and be like, oh, see, I knew them when. So looking forward to one day, you know what I'm saying? One day we can go, oh, wait, we played their song when they were still, you know, out of their home studio versus right. The studio that now, you know, is like $1 million.
That's I think the up-and-coming artists would have a much better shot out there if everybody would stick together and help each other out instead of just trying to shine on their own.
Right? Exactly. Exactly.
Here.
David, you said you were over there jamming.
I was over here fiesting.
Girl, there are some songs, I'm telling you, since I've been on this ride that I have played that I'm going, yeah, I cannot wait till they, you know, get to that point where I can go out here and get a CD or something, because otherwise I have to, you know, download it on, you know, from here, which is fine, but it's like I want to hear more, you know. It's like you hear this song, it's like, okay, what else you got?
Right.
So I can't wait till, you know, like Sean, you said, if we all could support them and just they could all be ahead. I mean, it doesn't have to be one or the other. It's everybody. So I'm excited. I love hearing the new music. And actually this one, I just heard today. It actually got sent to Lawless Radio, I think, sometime this week, and was just hitting our playlist yesterday. So that's how fresh I knew it was. That's why I wanted to play it tonight. I was like, oh, yeah, this is hot. But I heard it this morning. I was like, oh, yeah, I got to play this tonight. So shout out to B. Taylor. So definitely, definitely.
I ain't got to look him up on Facebook.
Right? Oh yeah, we're gonna blow them up. We're gonna blow them up on Facebook and Twitter, because I got, yeah, definitely. And as I was talking about, as I was saying earlier, our guest tonight is Mr. James Bailey, who is one of the directors of Virginia Cure, which is all volunteers. You know, they're volunteering their time. You know, nonprofit. You know, focusing on Virginia criminal justice and prison system and those who are impacted by the system. And, you know, it addresses so many different issues from the conditions, the medical conditions, the prison conditions, the juvenile justice, you know, sex offenders, death penalty, you know, the list is endless. So we have him tonight, and one of the other things that, like I said earlier, that they talk about is, you know, vote, restoring voter rights. And he's going to definitely talk about all of this and a little bit more, but definitely the voter rights restoration, because that is a big deal right now in the Senate. So let's welcome Mr. James Bailey. Hello, Mr. Bailey. How are you?
I'm good, Nikki. I was on the line earlier, and I got disconnected because I guess I'm in a bad signal area. So if I disappear, you know what's going on.
All right. That's okay. Just call back. We'll keep it moving. We'll keep it moving, but just call him back if you get disconnected. But we thank you. We thank you for joining us tonight and bringing this topic to our attention, because like I said, I'm not sure if you were able to listen, but before I said earlier that, you know, I wasn't even aware of the fact that Virginia is one of those states that when individuals get out of prison, they don't get their rights automatically restored. They have to go through a long process. But before we get to that point where you talk to us about this, tell the listeners, how did you get started in the Missing Voter Project as well as the Virginia Cure? What was your drive? How did you get here?
Well, that's funny. That's a funny story, because here's what happened. Back in 2007, the Virginia Beach, I was one of the vice presidents with the Virginia Beach NAACP, and they asked me a month out to do their Freedom Fund banquet, which is like the annual fundraiser for the Virginia Beach NAACP. And me being crazy said, okay. And about what happened is they had always done fundraisers where they made like a minimal amount of money, and they did them in like these doom and gloom areas and churches. And I decided that if we're going to do this for real, we need to be at the Virginia Beach Convention Center, and we needed some of the top speakers, and we needed to make this a real deal event. So with 30 days out, I probably had 35, but like 35 days out, I was able to go in there and just turn it out. Now, when I told them what I want to do, they all said, we can't support you because we don't believe this can be done. Because they'd never spent more than $5,000 for a fundraiser, and the convention center wanted like $15,000 to talk to them. That's just, you know, to come through the door. So nobody supported me, so I had this baby all by myself. At the end of the day, we made like $30,000 off this fundraiser where they had only in the past made like $4,000 or $5,000. So they were ecstatic, and they were like, hey, we need you to do the next fundraiser for us. Now you got a year, so you can do twice as good. Well, this was like November 07, and there was a senator in Illinois by the name of Barack Obama, who was like an awesome speaker, and I contacted his office because I figured this guy just spoke at the DNC National Convention. He had folks fired up. I need to see if I can somehow get him to come out to our next convention. So I called the office on a whim. Senator Barack Obama answered the phone. We talked about my wishes and desires, and he says, okay, at the end of it, put this in writing. I'm ready. So I was excited because I thought we had like a dynamic speaker, and we were ready to go. And about December 6th of that same year, this Senator Obama announced that he was running for president of the United States.
Wow.
You know, I got worried. I got worried because I thought, you know what, he's going to renege on our plans for him to become speaker at our November gig. So I called his office back after his announcement on December 6th to say, hey, look, what's going on? You still going to speak at our fundraiser? And I didn't get to talk to him. I had to talk to he had a handler, and whoever, I forget the lady's name, but I ended up talking to her, and of course she you know, she told me, hey, look, he's excited about doing that. So let's stay posted, this, that, and the other. Well, about February, during the primaries, that's when I found out. Actually, I talked to like three different handlers because he had switched from that lady to two other folks. But in February, during the primaries, they decided that he actually had a chance to be our next president, and which meant, of course, he's not going to have time to come to Virginia Beach for a free talk and a free conversation where he can be at, I forgot what state, for a $1,000 plate dinner. So they reneged on me, and I was ticked off, and I was mad, and I said, screw them. And then I said, you know what? I need to doggone suck it up and go out and get folks registered to vote in our Hampton Roads area because we have, like, such a low voter participation percentage that I need to go out and get folks registered to vote and get folks to the poll. So I went to our board, and I asked our executive board at the NAACP to jump on this bandwagon with me. At the time, I was the legal redress chair, and I asked them to jump on the bandwagon with me of going out and getting folks registered to vote. And their position was, hey, there's enough people out there doing that already. There's no need for us to do it. It'd be overkill. And it pissed me off so much that they said that because I thought everything helps. Every little bit helps. So I went out and I started in May of 2008, I started this organization called 10,000 Voters. My mission was to go from May 1 till September 30th and register 10,000 new voters with like 10 people. I was going to take 10 folks and go out and just knock on doors and register people to vote. So I had like 10 of the top civil rights advocates or in the voting arena. So we went out, man. We were accomplishing our mission, but here's what happened, Nikki. In the midst of going, because we were going into like, into some pretty rough neighborhoods, and we were all like seasoned voter registration folks. So we're not the people that you say, no, I'm not interested. No, I'm not. I'm registered. You know, we're pursuing this. You need to get registered. So what turned out is one out of every three people that we talked to, eventually, after some prodding, they fessed up to the fact that they couldn't vote because, in fact, some folks even told me they could never vote because they had lost their felony conviction. And it kind of freaked me out because I wasn't really on top of the felony conviction thing, like you alluded to earlier about, you know, Virginia being one of the states that didn't automatically give folks their voting rights back. So I was tossed into, like, a whole nother arena. And at the end of the day, what happened is we got, like, 10,111 people registered, new voters, and we got like 160 people's rights restored. But our mission objective kind of like changed because there's so – Virginia has about 450,000 folks that are not registered to vote, and over 60% of those are African-American, which – there's only 20% African-American makeup in the state of Virginia, so that's kind of freaky. So we changed our mission objective to try and deal with this disparity. And a couple folks at Virginia Organizing, a couple other groups saw what we were doing, and they wanted, like, to jump on our bandwagon, except they weren't happy with the 10,000 voters because they felt like that was all me, and they wanted to make it a group thing. So we, put our heads together. We ended up with this Missing Voter Project, which I liked a whole lot better than the 10,000 voters. So that's how I got the 10,000 voters thing started.
Hello, did we lose him? James? Okay, we lost you for a moment. So you were saying that, you know, you went from the 10,000 voters to the Missing Voter Project, and that's how you got there. Go back for a minute. You said that there are 60% out of that 500 number that are African-Americans who are not registered to vote?
Right. Well, here's what we know. We know, and I probably should have been in a better area here, and I apologize. We know that we know of 450,000 folks, Nikki, that we can put our hands on. Well, not the individuals, but the state statistic numbers from the federal and state prisons.
Okay.
We know of about 450,000 foreign people in the state of Virginia that have lost their right to vote due to felony conviction. Now, of that 450,000, 60% of those folks are African American. And the problem with that disparity is the fact that we only make up 20% of the population in the state of Virginia. And normally when I talk about restoration of voting rights, I like to tell folks about where we are with today with restoration here in Virginia. And I try and stick to Virginia because every state's different. But I like to talk about where we are as a state with restoration, how we got here, and what we need to do to get it fixed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did we lose him again?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. We can. Yeah, you just went out. Go ahead. So tell us what, as far as since we're talking about Virginia, so tell us first, before you really, go that. So, like I said earlier, I found out, through you actually, by knowing you, we are not one of those states that when people get out of prison, some states, they automatically get their votes back. And I found out, that that's not the case with Virginia. What do they need to do if somebody's listening right now and they're ex-felon, whatever, and they want their votes back? What's the process to go through that?
All right, good question. First, let me say that there's three states that you never lose your right to vote, regardless of what you can vote while you're in jail.
Wow.
And all the other states have varying degrees of voter registration. Virginia, Iowa, Florida, and Kentucky are four states that permanently disenfranchise people. What that means is once you've been convicted of a felony, you cannot ever vote again unless the governor says it's okay. So that's what permanent disenfranchisement means. A lot of times when you say folks are permanently disenfranchised, people want to argue that they can vote, they just have to go through a process. But permanent disenfranchisement means you can't vote unless the governor gives you permission. That's what that means. So in the state of Virginia, there's two systems in place. One for violent offenses and one for nonviolent offenses. The violent offense requirement is that you wait until you've completed your sentence. You wait 2 years after you've completed your parole, probation, or whatever else other requirements you have. The violent offender category requires that you wait 5 years after completing all of your prerequisites. Now, the confusing thing for most people, Nikki, is that they don't know what's considered violent and what's considered nonviolent. And that's a big problem for me in my dealing with this restoration of voting rights because, in my mind, a violent offense should be a violent offense, if you know what I mean. But let me tell you what qualifies as violent offenses, and maybe you'll understand what I'm talking about. You have to go through, and it's different applications, I'm sorry. The application for the nonviolent offenses is a two-page document. It requires basically that you keep your nose clear for 2 years after you finish your sentence and that you send in a letter from a community activist saying that, you're active in the community. And that's it. It's pretty simplistic. Within 60 days, the governor's been doing a great job of turning those around, getting people's rights restored. The violent offense application is about a 15-pager, which, you pretty much got to walk on water. That one right there, a lot of guys pay lawyers to do. We do it for folks for free. So anybody wanting a restoration of their voting rights can go to our website at dacure.org and, contact us, and we'll help them with that process. But the violent application, man, it's pretty extensive. And violent offenses, like I was saying earlier, are drug possession with the intent to distribute. And that one kind of pisses me off because if you've got no weapons charges, you've got absolutely no violence in your offense, but you had drug possession with the intent to distribute. And the intent to distribute, by the way, simply means that you had a certain weight amount that was in your charge. It doesn't necessarily mean you actually committed any violent offense. But for violent offenses, drug possession with the intent to distribute, drug distribution, drug manufacturing, robbery, malicious, unlawful wounding, felonious assault, maiming, murder, manslaughter, production of child pornography, shooting into an occupied vehicle or building, arson of an occupied vehicle or building, and hit and run. And election fraud falls under the violent offense. My uphill battle is trying to get the drug possession thing fixed. But that's okay. This governor right here, I met him back, when was that? When he was campaigning to run for governor, Sheila Johnson Wright. You know Bob Johnson Wright, the guy that owned BET Network?
Mm-hmm.
Well, his wife's here in Virginia, and Sheila Johnson. Rice is her last name. And she had a round table where she got all the local activists together to meet this McDonald guy to talk to him about where he stood on issues as he was running for governor. And I was invited to that round table, and it was awesome. Of course, I don't like going to those because normally what happens is you get into a room with a politician, and they say exactly what you want them to say so that you'll tell people they're the right person to vote for. Well, of course, at that time, I was with Virginia Keir, and Virginia Keir's core issue was parole, and my issue at the time with the missing voter was restoration of voting rights. So I got to talk to him about a couple issues. And what he said was, and it sounded great, he said that even though he was a prosecuting attorney, he understood the significance and importance of people that have paid their debt to society being able to get back, once they paid their debt to society, being able to get back into society and get their lives back together. And he understood that all these obstacles stop folks from being able to get their lives back together. But more importantly, he understood that people can engage civically. That is, you can't vote, you can't run for office, you can't be a no republic, you can't sit on jury. Then people don't really have ties to the community, so there's really nothing to stop them from, reoffending.
Right.
And most folks that get out, Nikki, the number one cause of recidivism or, reoffending is lack of jobs. They can't get a job. And most times you can't get a job because the employer says you have criminal record background.
Right.
So the governor was really, really hyped at that meeting, and I was hyped. And I was thinking to myself, God, I hope this dude's telling the truth. I mean, I hope he's serious. The cool thing is, after he got elected, he hired a guy for the Department of Corrections, the director for the Department of Corrections, a black guy who's probably one of the sharpest folks I've ever talked to. I mean, he is seriously honest. And I can't believe McDonald hired him, except that he had said to me a year before he got elected that that's what he was going to do. So he hired a really good guy for the Department of Corrections. And then he hired a guy to actually go in and handle the restoration of voting rights. There's a guy before he got there by the director, Michael Womack, a young kid, black kid, who I thought would be a goner. I thought he'd be gone. Michael was doing pretty good before McDonald got there. And when and Michael, we had a good rapport. So when McDonald got there, I thought Michael would be gone. Well, McDonald kept him on board as well as the director of restoration of rights. So this guy now is doing everything he said he was going to do. So I'm like, I'm blown aback. I'm shocked.
So a politician who's actually doing what they're supposed to be doing?
Exactly. I mean, he did what he said he was going to do. And it's crazy. I mean, people do that?
Right.
So
I understand.
Now that I'm freaked out, right, he announced at the State of the Union, Virginia State of the Union address. He announced, and he got the Attorney General, and I don't know if you know Puccinelli, the Attorney General. This guy, in fact, let me go back a little bit here real quick. After the McDonald got elected, Puccinelli started doing these really hardcore, I'm a redneck thing, to try and hinder a lot of people in their progression forward. And one of the things Puccinelli did or wanted to do with restoration of voting rights is he wanted folks that wanted their rights restored to draft an articulate letter outlining why they should have their rights restored. Now, that thing pissed me off like there was no tomorrow. But the cool thing is all the activists, we all got together and we protested this theory and this idea. And absolutely. We even got the president of the United States to jump on our bandwagon and say that was crazy. So,
I mean, they're already jumping through hoops. I mean, I've written this down. I mean, you got the nonviolent, this 2-year wait and the violent. I mean, a violent one, I could probably understand the 5-year and the 15-page. I mean, I've never been locked up. I don't have a felony. I don't have a misdemeanor. But, you know, the whole 15 pages and probably, walking over water to get your rights restored. I know it's very, for those individuals who do it, it's probably very cumbersome as well as almost puts a stop. Do you ever run into that where somebody is trying to get their rights restored and then they just stop? They're like, okay, you know what, I can't, it's just too much, or do they keep on going? Do they keep pressing on to get those back?
And you know what, Nikki? That's the darn biggest problem with this restoration of voting rights piece. When I was back, when I first learned about this back in 2008, first of all, folks did not want to admit to me, or any of us. I had about 12 really good people. They didn't want to admit to us that they had convictions, that they had criminal felony convictions that prevented him from voting.
Right.
That's first and foremost.
I can understand that. I mean, some people don't want people to know.
Exactly. So once they admitted that, Nikki, then they had like this big reluctance to go through this heartache or hope of getting their rights restored when they had to depend on the governor to make a call. Because the rule is, if the governor says no, the governor does not have to say why he said no, and you don't have an appellate process that you can go through. You just have to wait until you're eligible to reapply. So these guys are reluctant to do it because now they got to rely on a government that they feel that betrayed them. To top that one off, here's the icing on the cake. A lot of folks that I met as I went out to do the simple voting rights restoration, and I'm trying to promote it by letting folks know that once you get your voting rights back, you can then work on getting your gun rights back and getting your records expunged with simple parts. Well, then I started to meet, Nikki, folks that have actually put in applications 5-10 years previous and not heard from the governor's office. So most folks, you said you haven't been arrested or been in jail or none of that stuff. Most folks that's been arrested, been in jail, the one thing they want to do is be invisible. They don't want to be bothered with anybody. They don't want to tell anybody their business. They don't want to go into it. They just want to get in where they fit in and just be silent, be quiet. So,
oh, well, then that's definitely not me. That's not us, Keita. And that's not us.
we like to be seen.
Yes. That's not us. Okay.
Well, not these guys, man. They want to be invisible, man. So they don't want to get their rights back. They could care less. All they want to do is to go to work, you know, for McDonald's or wherever it is they're working. And a lot of folks, I met one young lady who couldn't even get a job, so she actually had to go out and dang start her own restaurant. But you've got all of these emotions going through people that they don't want to be bothered with trying this process. And I'm happy you mentioned that because that's a big problem here. We're getting folks rights restored. You know, they really want to be invisible.
Right. And you know what? I want to give a chance here for my co-host here to, my special co-host tonight, to ask any questions that, as they've been listening, that might have popped in their head that I might not have asked. Keita, Sean, either one of you, if you want to ask James something, just please go ahead.
Well, I'm actually sitting here listening, and the thing that's getting ready to, you know, shock everybody is that I'm one of those people that he's talking about, a nonviolent offender who has been told that you can't vote until you do your sentence or your time or whatever it is that you have to do, then you have to wait the 2 years. So I can understand definitely what he's talking about, what Mr. Bailey is saying when he says that some people want to be invisible. I don't really consider it trying to be invisible, though. I think it's more of a, we're trying not to be back on the radar. You know, you don't want to be on the radar so much that whatever you can actually get into may be looked down upon. You're trying your best to try to get back into society. You're trying to be accepted again by society. And like you said, there's so many things, so many walls that are put up in front of you that it makes it harder or makes you think, you know what, they're not even going to try to give me a chance to do it.
Exactly.
So that's what the problem is out there. But I definitely agree with everything that he's saying, and I wish that more people that are in this type of situation would find out what they have to do, how they have to do it. Now, yeah, you're right. There are a lot of people that can't get a job. Not because they're not applying, but I give you a case in point. I put in for a job, and everything was good to the point where did my first interview over the phone, second interview over the phone, but because of paperwork being slow and because of things happening in a not of a steady pace, I had my job offered to me, told me how much I was making, and everything was great. And then background check comes up. Uh-oh. Wow. How do we tell this guy that we've talked to and everybody talked to and you had, you know, this person that loved him on the phone and talked about him and this, that, and the third. How do we go back and say we have to recant, you know, this job offer?
Right, right.
And
then we got to hold your past against you. Right.
Yeah,
even though you're great and you fit in perfectly here, we got to hold your past against you. Even though you paid your debt to society, we got to keep on making you pay a little bit more.
We got to make you pay a little bit more. So, you know, that's the negative part. But then, I mean, if you have somebody that's you know, has that drive, that willpower, that's ready to go out there and do for themselves, then guess what? They'll go out, they'll do what they have to do, they'll start their own business or do whatever they have to do in order for society to have no choice but to look past their past and accept them into their future. So that's what you got to
do. Wow. And Sean, since you brought up, I mean, I didn't know that about your past. You know, I didn't. But since you brought that up, have you gone and taken that step for the, you know, for the 2-year period and gotten your votes restored?
Well, I still have some time on mine. So even like you said, when you have a nonviolent offender, you get either you'll get the sentencing of the jail time, or you'll get probation, and that's still that time of you keeping your nose clean. So once you finish your probationary period, and that's what I was going to ask Mr. Bailey while he was on the phone. Once you finish your probationary period, if it was just a probation that you got, would you still have to sit for the 2 years, or would it something different?
Sean, I'm glad you asked me that because, I should have explained, and I got so hyped. The governor issue. I mean, the dude really has blown my mind because, let me tell you this before I make my point. This governor, right, he's so adamant about making this restoration of voting rights automatic that he's got his attorney general who has damn fought us. Sorry about the cuss. But he fought us tooth and nail on everything. He's got his attorney general to jump on his bandwagon and say restoration of voting rights should be automatic. In his State of Union address, he said that, and he got the attorney general to jump on it. They had a meeting at the election subcommittee to pass it, and they denied it. The Senate committee actually passed it, so it's still alive. There's still a chance to make it automatic. But here's what I believe is going to happen in reality, Sean. If this General Assembly doesn't pass the automatic restoration of voting rights, I believe this governor is going to walk out of his governorship. And one of the things he can do as his executive powers allows him to do is to make restoration of voting rights automatic in and of itself by himself without anybody's permission. I believe this guy is going to do that if they don't do it for him. So that's a shocker. But what I should have said, what I should have explained earlier, because this has been a stickling point, and it has really frustrated me throughout this process, and that is I mentioned earlier, Nika, that violent offenders had to wait 5 years to apply for their rights, to get their rights back, and nonviolent offenders had to wait 2 years to get their rights back. What I didn't, and I always like to do when I'm one-on-one, is I like to explain to folks what that means is this. For a nonviolent offender, your two-year waiting process starts or begins after you've completed everything. And here's what everything means. When you come out, you've served your time, you walk out the jail door. Some guys have a probation officer that says probation or parole, I forget the terms, but that says you're on supervised release or you're on supervised probation for the next 2, 3, 5 years. While they're on supervised probation, that 2, 3, or 5 years doesn't allow them to start the two-year waiting period to get their civil rights restored or their voting rights restored. So if you come out and you got 3 years of supervised probation, you got to finish that before you can start your 2 years. And that sucks because now it just turned into a five-year waiting period before you can apply. And before, there was guys that had, I think it was called, God, I forget the term, but it was like, I don't know if it was like 10 years unsupervised release. That's what it was called, unsupervised release. A guy would come out and he had 10 years unsupervised release. And what would happen is the last governors would make you wait till you finish your 10-year unsupervised release before you can apply for your right. We actually got to go in and talk to Governor Kane, and his Secretary of State said, no, that's wrong. I got Kent Willis with ACLU to go in with me and make this argument. He's an awesome lawyer. But he went in and made the argument that if it's unsupervised release, why can't we immediately apply for the restoration of voting rights as opposed to waiting until those 10 years are up? And they agreed with us that if you're on unsupervised release, you can actually apply immediately. Your two-year waiting period could start immediately. So that worked out really good, Nick, because there's a lot of guys that have 10, 20-year unsupervised release, And in the past, they were actually having to wait. But the thing that sucked is those guys that actually sent their applications in. And I called Michael Womack, the director of restoration, and asked him, how is it possible that a guy sent in his application 5 years ago and he hasn't heard any word from the governor's office about the status of it? And Michael openly admitted to me that, James, you know what? We've got boxes and boxes of applications in here that are just sitting from like 2 and 3 previous administrations, just sitting here, and we can't even get to them all. And
wait. You just said they have boxes sitting in the governor's office that people are waiting for their rights to be restored, done their time, done their probation, or either they don't have the unsupervised probation and have their applications. And there are tons of boxes. Those are votes that we could have, and they're just sitting there.
Right.
Is that what, that's what you just said? Oh, my God.
That's what I just said. And that was a shocker that Michael would share that with me, because that was like some serious, you know, if I was one of those guys looking for some darn media time, you know, I could have doggone went crazy. But we were just having a heart-to-heart. And the kid, you know, he's a young black guy, and he just openly admitted to me, James, look, we just found, and this was years ago, this was back in 2009.
Okay.
He says, James, man, I swear I'm doing my very best, but just the other day, I walked into the governor's office, and there's boxes with applications in them that have been sitting there for, you know, 4 years or more. And that was a shocker. And that right there makes folks reluctant to trust or believe in it. So one of the things, when this new governor came in the office, one of the things I asked him, this dude has been awesome, I got to tell you. One thing I asked him for was to give some type of acknowledgement that you received folks' applications. So
right. This
dude, he took it to a whole nother level. He said, you know what? When we get your application, we're going to send you a letter back acknowledging the governor's office has received your application. And within 60 days, we're going to have an answer to you. So I'm like, damn. I mean, that's before, you know, guys who wait six to 12 months. Now this dude's like giving you a letter within 3 days saying we got your application. And then 60 days later, you've got a yay or nay. But then he turns around and he says, you know, if I deny your application, instead of having to wait 2 years to reapply, I'm only going to make you wait 1 year. For guys that are nonviolent, before you had to wait 3 years, he's only making you wait 2 years. So, you know, this dude is a shocker. I mean, you know what I mean? He's making
some progress here versus before, and that's a positive. Positive.
Right.
And I want Keita, did you have any questions that might have came up in this conversation? Oh, my God, this is just, I mean, I'm finding a lot of stuff out here, James. I'm thankful for you coming on the show that I definitely had no clue.
Well, I didn't necessarily have questions, but I did want to say that it is an opportunity for African-Americans to really feed back into their community. I think that we forget a lot about those that have been in prison for whatever the reason. And you know that they're there. You know that they're probably going through something, especially trying to get reintegrated into society. But then we forget about that you have lost their rights and their right to vote and how that can affect them later on. We're talking about the leadership of our country. And to not be able to have that input, I'm sure, has a great deal of play within themselves and their thought process. Like, well, it really doesn't matter because I don't have a say-so versus I might not have a say-so at this very moment, but after this process is reevaluated and analyzed, because now I have the opportunity and I'm going to get a letter letting me know that the opportunity may or may not be afforded to me. There's still a glimmer of hope. So I just wanted to personally say I thank you for reaching out and opening up and broadening our mindset and how we view things to get back out in the community and reassure those, give hope. And I think, you know, of course now with Barack Obama being our president and his big thing is hope, if that's what we truly believe in, if that's who you went out to go and vote for and support, then by all means continue to pass that on. And those that have the opportunity to have their voting rights restored, to get out and give their, if so, a lack of words, their testimony of what they had to go through, but how they were able to make that choice and to get out and vote and to say the person that is in office may or may not be there due to my vote. You understand what I mean? So I really do appreciate that. And this gives, I guess, me on the, not just on the radio hosting side, but on the model side, on the individual
woman side.
Right.
Side.
It gives me the mindset to say, what can I do as a woman, as a person, to get out there and help those and re-motivate them, get them geared up to say, you can do this. I know it's going to seem a little hard. It might be a little long, but it's worth it. Just trust me.
It's
just try
it.
Right.
And Keisha? Keisha, is that your name?
Quita.
Lord have mercy. I'll never be able to get that right.
You already know. I'm one of those black women names. It's okay.
No. Quita. Did I say it right?
Yes.
Thank you. I don't want to mess it up too bad. But Quita, look, here's the thing, too, because what you just said, like, you know, that's why I like interaction with folks, because, you know, when you're out there pounding the pavement, you know, as opposed to sitting and talking, you really get to doggone talk to real people. And I'm going to tell you something about folks that have I'm going to tell you something about folks that are trying, that are want to get their civil rights restored. We call it voting rights, but it's civil rights, because what happens is you actually get your voting rights back, you get your right to hold public office back, you get your right to sit on a jury, you get your right to be a notary, and then once you've gotten your civil rights, your basic civil rights restored, you can go for a furtherance. You know, you can go in now and get your gun rights back and get your record expunged through what they call simple pardon. But look, the folks that actually trying to get the civil rights restored are some of the most politically astute people I've ever met. You know, when we go out and do voter education, you know, we're out telling folks why they need to vote and how to determine who's the right guy to vote for. Well, these guys, man, they know. I mean, they know all the pros and cons. They know how to handle debate. I mean, they're on their A game. And I guess what happens is you've gotten so much downtime, it gives you, if you desire, it gives you an opportunity to really evaluate your system of governing. Because when I was growing up, my grandmother said to me, James, and you don't know this when you're a kid, James, I want you to work with Pastor Jones and go out and register people to vote, even though you're 12 years old and you want to go and play basketball and check out the girls. You need to be helping Pastor register people to vote, because everything we do in this country revolves around politics. And I didn't know what the heck she was talking about. But the bottom line is, everything we do revolves around politics. And one of the things I learned growing up is black folks are quick to say, I'm not into politics, or I'm not political, or whatever the case may be. But the fact of the matter is your destiny revolves around politics. So you, if you ain't into politics, or you need to get into it. But the guys that are getting out, trying to get their rights restored, are really politically savvy, the most politically astute folks I've ever met. And I wanted to say, although I really didn't get a chance to tell you all about the history of this thing, because the history of it is basically rooted in
racism. I'll have to have you back on.
That'd be awesome.
Give that to that's fine. But go ahead, finish your thought.
My thought was, last November 1st, I did a job fair for ex-offenders. We're not calling folks, instead of ex-felons or ex-offenders or whatever the title may be, we've decided all in unison to call folks with criminal records returning citizens. So I had a job fair November 1st.
Nice.
And what'd you say?
That was nice.
That just said nice. That just said nice.
Yeah, it's a much better definition of who folks are, because what happens is you lost your citizenry when you went to prison or jail, and you've got it back. But I did this job fair, and I did it because a couple guys I know and work with were having problems getting jobs, and I knew quite a few employers, so I figured I could get an employer or two to come out and offer 25 jobs to maybe a couple hundred guys. And I thought that's a good ratio. So I said I'm going to do this ex-felon job fair, and I'm going to announce it, you know, and let folks know I'm doing it. And I'll have a couple folks, you know, a couple hundred folks there. And I talked to some employees. Well, what happened is I ended up with like 1,378 people showed up to this ex-felon job fair, and I had like seven employers, and I believe we had like 75 jobs or something that, you know, they were giving up. And it let me know that, or it reassured me that, you know, society's idea about folks not coming out to get jobs, you know, because the jobs are there, it's faulty. Because these guys, they came out and they braved the cold and they hung in there for like 3-4 hours waiting to talk to, you know, to get their chances to get a job. And it made me proud, you know, that they were willing, because that's what you got to do. You got to step up and go out and get it. So what's happened in my little journey here with restoration of voting rights is I've learned that this job market is a major problem. So I've jumped on this national campaign called Ban the Box. And hopefully we can talk about that next time I come on the show. But I'm going around from city to city asking cities to remove from their job application the question that asks, have you been convicted of a felony? Virginia state law says that certain jobs have to do background checks. So it's acceptable that a person fill out an application with the city and they're asking for that job, that they've got to do an addendum, another part to the application that will allow the city to do a background check. But the lady that wants to sit there and work on the computer, she doesn't need a background check. The guy that wants to go and work on lawn care or maintenance or whatever the case for the city, they don't need background checks. You know what I mean? Because right now the cities are using folks. Portsmouth, for example, brags about it saves the city over $2.5 million by using inmate labor to do certain jobs. Well, why can't they offer those certain jobs to those guys when they get out? So I'm on the Ban the Box campaign. The city of Newport News actually signed off October 1st. Yvonne Manning, a really good friend of mine, human resource director in Newport News, signed off to Ban the Box in Newport News. She's removed from the job application the question that says, have you been convicted of a felony? And that's a guy's worst nightmare, no matter how good you are, what skills. A lot of guys have more skills than the average Joe. But no matter what your skill set is, you know, once you say, yes, I've been convicted of felony, you pretty much ain't looked at. But
James,
we will hopefully get to talk about that next time.
Yeah, I thank you. I thank you so much, because you definitely have enlightened me and Keita and Sean. I mean, it was definitely destined for you to be on the show tonight, because your input as well was just, it just brought it full circle. And this topic is definitely not in a 30-45 minute interview. This is one of those topics, you know, that, like Keita says, it's we need to take it to the pavement, not just me bringing it to the air right now. It's something that, you know, when her and I are out doing what we do, we need to figure out ways that we can tell our fellow man or woman how to get their rest, you know, their right, like you said, their returning citizenship back. Because it's everybody. I mean, there are people, like Sean said, that have, you know, gone and done nonviolent stuff and are out and they're on, you know, they're doing, you know, probation. But they still need to know that there's an opportunity for them to, you know, to get their rights back. And I thank you wholeheartedly for being on the show. We appreciate it. And I do invite you back to part two. That's what we'll call it, part two. To really, you know, maybe get, you know, more in depth on it. And I don't know, you know, you and I have worked together before. Maybe we can come up with something else down the road for our 757. And, you know, get it, you know, really to educate and get the news out there even more. That would be something that you and I can talk off air about. But I wanted to thank you so much for coming tonight. I appreciate it. I really do. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back after we listen to Lost to Found by T. Wilson and Sean Donovan.
living or dying. We live in a world where kids gotta die for no reason. Innocence lost. I hear you.
I'm saying that
local comments. They are awesome. That was Lost to Found. That's another new one that hit Lawless Radio about 2 weeks ago, and I've totally been feeling that. I'm loving it. That's T. Wilson and Sean Donovan. I'm not too big on rap, so for me to say I'm feeling a rap song, that means a lot. definitely. That's one you want to bounce to in your car and be just like, oh, yeah, okay. And then when you get to the, you know, if you're still clubbing, I still every now and then go out, but not that much. But, you know, you're feeling it. That's one to feel. And if you're just tuning in, we had a wonderful guest, Mr. James Bailey, talking to us about restoration of rights. And I originally said voter rights, but he educated us the last 45 minutes. It's really citizen rights, restore everything, and we just thank him. And we're gonna work out something, and to get the 757 and beyond a little bit more aware of our fellow citizens, aware of their rights and how they can get them back. So that's definitely something we're gonna work out. Tita, Sean, it's been awesome having y'all on the show. I'm sorry that the first part got a little long, but it was good information. Audience needed to hear that.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Let's shift gears now and talk about, you know, some hot topics, some things that, you know, just come to mind. I was, of course, I don't know if anybody knows, I don't even know if you two know, but our lovely, wonderful John Kerry was made Secretary of State as of today. Did y'all know that?
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah. As of, what'd you say, Sean?
Nice.
Exactly, right? Definitely nice. I was like, right before I got off work today, I caught that on the internet, and I was like, ah, sweet. So, you know, we got now Obama, Biden, and Kerry. So, hello, the next 4 years.
All right.
That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
We're going to be looking. It's going to be nice.
Right.
Definitely going to be nice. Okay. And if I have any Republican, you know, listeners, I'm just speaking my mind, you know, saying, love you still. We still love you, but you know, hey, just say it. Definitely nice. So, before I bring up any topics, anything y'all want to talk about coming to mind right now? My comic relief over there.
I'm gonna let y'all come up with the topic, and I'll just get it because you know my topics might be off the wall a little bit.
I want to hear one of your topics.
We'll get into that later. Unless you want to do it now, you know, I don't know.
Go ahead. Keith, I say that we let him go.
I think we should, but it's a man.
Normally the man opens the door for the female. Mm-hmm. We as females gonna actually flip it, and we're gonna open.
Y'all want me to open the door? You gonna let me?
We gonna open the door for you.
Oh, open the door. Well, all right. Well, excuse me. Let me get myself together then. Go ahead, open the door.
I got one side, she got the other. Go ahead. If we hold it.
I get both doors? All right, well, here it is.
Both doors open.
Let me open up both doors. Yeah, thank you for opening the door for me. All right. Now, how much reality TV do we need?
None. We got reality TV.
I just want to know, like, I'm tired of seeing them. I'm tired of the ones that don't make no sense and everybody is on, like, Facebook and Twitter and anything else. It's starting to get so bad now. People are taking pictures of the TV screen and putting it on their, Instagram?
Instagram.
It's getting ridiculous. The Real Housewives of Hip Hop in Black Ink on Dynasty. I don't know what the name of the shows are no more, but it's completely out of hand.
I agree. Now my other co-hosts, they love the reality TV shows, and usually when they're talking about that, I usually am silent because I don't watch them. So I can't, when they bring up something and say stuff, I'm like, bless y'all go ahead and make a little comment, and they do that. I don't watch them. I don't feel them. I'm going, I got enough drama in my life. If I watch a reality TV show, let me just look in the back, you know, look over here to my left, look over to my right, and, you know, keep it moving. But I agree with you, Sean. Oh, my God.
My thing is this. The way I feel and the way I believe is, you know, I'm a very religious person. So the way I think about things is what you feed lives and what you starve dies. If we keep sitting around and filling our minds with all this negative crap that we watch on TV and the beliefs that things are the way that we see them on television with all of this
drama, and it's all about money, and it's all about how you look, and it's all about what you wear and all of that stuff. If we continue to feed all this stuff into our minds, we're going to continue to develop the society that we have developed already, which is going in the wrong way. And it just aggravates me to know that so many of our young people, and when I say young people, I'm young. I'm going to consider myself to still be young. I'm going to say that. Because I'm in that generation of, you know, the Pepsi generation. You know, that's, you know, I don't know how old everyone is that's, you know, in here, but I came up in the time frame when they felt like, you know, young men my age now were not supposed to see 21 years old. You know, we weren't going to make it that far. So I'm looking at today's society and wondering, you know, when are we going to do things to start trying to change what's going on, because we're losing more people, just like Mr. Bailey said earlier. You know, the population of the African-American population makes up 20% of Hampton Roads, but 60% of us are not registered to vote.
Right.
So we gotta start doing something to make some changes. And I think, for one, cut off all the, I need to use Mr. Bailey's word, damn, reality TV.
I said, okay, I'm with you right there, Sean. I think people need to turn their focus on what's really important. And people get so caught up in drama, because you have to remember that they're drawn to the drama. That's why they, you know, not to sound stereotypical, but, you know, those that go to the clubs, they like to see the fights. They right there, ooh, 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 let me see. They like the drama. They like the action. They don't like the everyday, okay, I know what's going on. So people are more so drawn to the drama. So then when you can see it on TV, ooh, I know what's going on. They like, you know how to think of people that like to be nosy. They like to know what's going on. So then you get around people. And that's the sad part when you're like, you should have so much going on in your own life to where you're pushing yourself to progress and to become better, that whatever else is going on, it's like, oh, you know, I'm sorry to hear that. If you need me to pray for you, fine. If you need to talk and vent about it, that's fine. But I still have so much going on within my own self. I don't have time to worry about what kind of drama you have going on. And it's because so many people are drawn to negativity more so than positivity. And that is I think it's a generational curse, so to speak, that we, you know, as young people have to break down with our own children. We have to educate them and bring them into, no, you need to renew your thought process whenever you want to be around negativity or when you want to see negativity.
Absolutely.
And, I'm getting ready to be 30. You know, I'm getting ready to be 30. I don't have kids, but I said, as soon as I have kids, I bet you, they bet not dare say, I can't. And I say, who told you you can't? Oh,
but
I have
right
to
now,
look
you're,
like.
You're a high commodity right now. Like, you're 30 with no kids. you're a high commodity right now.
He done put you out there on the air for now.
Become
a single show.
But listen, though, I'm 35 with no kids. I'm a high commodity right now.
Yeah, that's true.
Some people are wondering, like, right now, the question is, how did you do that?
Exactly, I get that a whole lot.
And you know what, you're right. But y'all know what, you're right. You two are hot commodities right now, because no matter what age you are, and having no children and single is definitely a hot commodity. And the fact that I know both of you, and you're both smart and you're intelligent and you're trying to make something of yourself, hello,
don't
that's
forget,
a cheap
don't forget
love.
Fun. Don't forget fun.
Okay, yes, fine and handsome. Yes, shout, yes.
Wow. Put me out there.
Yes, fine and handsome. Gorgeous and beautiful, both of you. But yes, y'all are a hot commodity and a rarity, you know, because we don't have that, especially for the African-American culture or any minority culture, because most of them are, you know, have one or two kids, maybe more.
Now it's like that in all cultures, because what do you got? Shows like 16 and pregnant on TV. Mm-hmm. Like, what is that about? How do you show that to your kids?
and expect them to go turn around and be like, okay, well, it's okay if they're on the television and they're pregnant, they're 16, and they don't have no husband and da-da-da. So, you know, why can't I go out here and have sex and do this and do that?
Exactly.
It's all acceptable. No, it's not.
No.
It's not acceptable. It's not. I mean, yes, you know, I'm you know, single with child, but, you know, that was a different circumstance, you know. it was, you know, hey, I was almost down the aisle, and, you know, things just didn't work out. But the thing about it is, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're single or married. If you're teaching your child the right stuff, like Kita, you just said, I'm piggybacking off of what you said, you start when they're young. And my kids, they don't, my daughter and my nephews and nieces, they don't know the words can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's not allowed in the house. It's I can and I will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you try first before, you know, and then if you fall, you get your butt back up, you dust yourself off, and you keep it moving.
Exactly.
You know,
I look at that like it's not even that they don't know the word can't. They know it. They're just scared to use it around you. Because they know what comes with that. They know they're going to sit there and they got somebody that's going to stay on top of them and say, look, that's not what we're doing here. You know better. Let's go ahead and let's change it. You're going to fix that. We don't have too many people that's doing that. They're not starting young, just like Quita said. They're not starting young. If you try to get your child on the right page at 12 years old, you're late.
Exactly.
You're not going to get nowhere with that child. You need to start when they're in that 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 range. That's when you get at them. That's when you teach them. That's when you let them know.
That's,
you know, I'm from that old school. I'm knocking you out. I'm going to knock you out. When you wake up, I guarantee you, you'll understand what I mean.
You'll be some stars when you wake up. You're like, wait, I think it's, you know, it's night. There's stars. Well, exactly, because I'm from that old school, too. I'm going to knock you out and then talk, and then, you know, then we're going to talk about it when you get up. But, yes, and I agree. You have to start, you know, when they're young. The youngest of my nieces and nephews is 2 years old, and we're already starting with him. He's like, oh, I can't, you know, pretend like the little baby boy. I can't. Yes, you can. Get your butt up.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can.
You know, you knock them out. You talk to them while they're snoring, while they sleep. You whisper in their ear. Now, when you get up, things are going to be better for you. When you get up, you're going to be a new man. You're going to be a new woman. When you wake up, everything is going to be on the brighter side of the day. When they wake up, guess what? They're going to feel 1,000 times better. But they're going to feel a little
Right.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, it is what it is. Got to work it out that way.
I did want to jump in real quick. And I think it was you, Nikki. You know, my brain is a million miles an hour right now. But I wanted to say that the kids see it on TV. Oh, they're 16 and they're pregnant. They're on TV. They're looking at the fame side of it. Oh, I can be on TV too. Oh, everybody going to know who I am. Ooh, my baby daddy, he fine. He going to have to take care of me. Like I said, this new age stuff. Oh, somebody going to take care of me. I also hear a lot of the young girls saying, I don't have to work because I look good enough. He going to take care of me.
Oh,
wrong
that's
mentality.
Sad.
And right, and it's sad because they're like, all I got to do is look pretty and have a big booty and somebody going to make sure I'm taken care of. Wrong answer. And I think as far as I'm concerned, I would hope, Lord help me, if my child ever said, I wish I could be like such and such and such, and it was not of the positive side. Well, let's go and look at what they're going through. You're 16 and you want to get pregnant,
right?
You want to have kids, you want to be. Let's go talk to some people that's already been through it. Let's see how they're living. Let's see if they finished their high school degree. Let's see what kind of effect it had on them by not getting their high school degree when they have this child and then they don't have a job, they don't have a car, they're still staying at home with their parents. Now, let's see about how they feel about their own self-esteem when their child doesn't have anything to eat, the food stamps that they've been trying to get, they're denied about. Let's talk about all that kind of stuff, the Section 8. Child support that they're not getting. Let's talk about those type of things. Okay, you want to go out and have all this random sex. Let's look at some pictures. Let's talk to some people that got AIDS. Let's talk to people that have HIV. Let's talk to people that have herpes and gonorrhea and syphilis. Let's talk to these type of people. And as a parent, as a parent, is to put you out there. Okay, you want to talk about, you want to do drugs, let's go and sit at the crack house for a couple hours. Look at the things that they're going through.
I think you don't want to sit in a crack house for no hours. I just don't think that you want to sit in a crack house.
But that's what I'm saying.
You will get high. You will get high.
I'm from Flint, Michigan. So then...
okay, never mind. Understandable. You got that. That's all you. You got it.
So, I mean, yeah, she got that. I'm like, ain't too much that I'm going to be like, no, we can't do, that's not where we go, and that's not how we handle things. Let's just look at a documentary. No, let's do firsthand, because I don't want you to say you don't understand.
Yeah, let's
make
it high.
But I agree with that. They need to see it. Y'all are so silly. But you need to see it. They need to see it. I mean, one of my sisters, when she had her first child, we actually took my sister's now 20, but she was about 8 or 9, and we got special permission for her to be in the delivery room.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to scare a female or a male into not having sex or not, and because of the fact that there may be a possibility of just that one time, and they go, it's only going to be once, you're not going to get pregnant, you can get it. Put them in a doggone delivery room with a female screaming all kinds of stuff and a baby coming out. I tell you, I guarantee you, it will scare the crap out of them. Yes.
That might be why I don't have no kids now. I done been in there a couple of times. That could be the reason. You might have just woke me up a little bit. I'm 35 and I don't want to go in there right now and see it.
So put a child in there. Get special permission, put the child in there. And I'm totally down with that, like Keita said. Don't just tell them, no, you can't do this, because show them what the effects will be if they do whatever it is you know they're talking about, or they're drawing near. And like you said, Sean, these reality TV shows, which sparked this whole conversation, it all it's doing is putting a glimmer of glam, sparkles, bedazzle it up, whatever you want to call it, the bling, making everything that they're doing right for the kids of tomorrow.
That's all they're doing, is feeding this negative stuff into their mind, and they're thinking that that's what they need in order to go forward. All I have is nieces, nephews, and godsons and goddaughters. If any one of my godchildren, female persuasion, say, I want to have a baby at 16, I'm going to need everybody that is on this line and listening to begin praying right then and there. They're going to have to pray for me and them. Pray that I don't kill them, and pray that they don't get killed. Because one of the two is going to happen if they start talking about having kids at a young age. It just doesn't make any sense.
I'm right there with you, because y'all both know that I have a daughter, and she's 6. But I tell you right now, let her walk up in here. Let her walk up in here talking about some craziness. Y'all will have to not only pray for her sanity, her safety, and being able to live, but you're going to have to pray for me, because somebody's going to have to come and get me out of jail. I don't say I don't have a rap sheet, but I'm telling you, that day, I'm going to
get
one.
I'm
going to get one, and not just her. I'm like you, Sean. I have God children. I have nieces and nephews. Let one of them walk up in here. And that's a wrap. I mean, because I don't play when it comes to my kids. I don't play when it comes to my kids. That is one thing I have, my passion for is children in general. But,
that's all it is, children having children. I know a 35-year-old grandmother. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You're a 35-year-old grandmother.
It's not happening. She better not.
Exactly.
It's taken me 6 years just to call myself a mom. So don't even think about turning around in about 10 years and tell me I'm a girl. I will. No.
Yeah.
No. know. But y'all know what? I have had a blast tonight. I thank both of you for when I reached out to you, you know, earlier today, this afternoon, and agreeing to come on the show. If I ever can do something for you, please let me know. Y'all know I got your back. Y'all have always had mine. I always have yours. Support network is all what we do. Ladies and gentlemen, who's been keeping it real with Nikki Outlaw, my wonderful special co-host, Keita Hendrick. And if you ever got anything for phone acting or what, you can hit her up. Hit me up. I'll get you connected. Sean, DJ Customs. If you got that building that you want to be built or something, let me know. Peace. Till next Tuesday. Lawless.